When Les had scarpered with Jason, a young waiter from the hotel where he was chef, Annie's Yorkshire puddings had taken a nosedive. She'd stared at the flat brown splodges on the baking trays and had been reminded of her first sponge cake. Instead of standing in a golden peak when she'd edged it out of the oven, it had whooshed down in the middle and gone splat. She'd glared at it and in a rage had hurled it into the nearest bin. Never again had her sponges sunk. She'd been cooking all her working life, fettling away for most of it in the kitchens of the Rose and Crown. On the day the Yorkshire puddings had collapsed, she'd stood at the steel sinks and thought, "It's time you packed it in, Annie lass. You've had enough. Aye, you've had enough. 43 years turned into Black Forest gâteau, wedding cakes, French fries and steak burger and chips, scampi and chips, steak and kidney pie." "I'm going," she'd told Mandy, her assistant. "Get away." "Oh, yeah, I've done my whack. I want to live."
"You'll maybe think different tomorrow."
"No, I shall not."
The kids, Darren and Kerry, were married and lived away, so she didn't have to think about them. She was on her tod. When she opened the door of her semi, that was it. On the last day at the Rose and Crown, they'd had an ease up and presented it with a gift token. Well, after that, it had all gone quiet. She didn't know many folks round about, what with her always having been at work, and all the work lot were still at it. When you'd retired, what did you do? She'd had her head filled with joints and sauces and orderings and timings for years and years. 12 was 12. It wasn't 1:30, and 7 was 7, and not 8. It had been like one long examination. If the punters complained, you were for it. The kiddies had once had a hamster, and the way it footed round on its treadmill had reminded her of her own life. After a fortnight at home, she'd felt unhinged. She couldn't be doing with meals for one, and she'd vacuumed throughout every day, polished the windows, had the china cabinet out, and had stared at the gift token propped up on the mantelpiece in the front room and wondered. Here she was, still with some go in her, just stranded. She'd been used to rattling about hither and thither, and all that energy sizzling round inside her made her dither with nervousness. Radio 1 was going full blast, and she hummed along and trilled now and then, and waltzed a bit until she'd banged into the suite of the drinks trolley. Les had been a big one for drinks trolleys and ice buckets. Not that they'd ever used them. "Just for dusting over," she'd muttered, "or breaking your leg on." With Radio 1 still booming in her head, she'd decided to pop into town, and she was just pedalling down the road when her eye happened on the notice board. "Tea dances, every Wednesday, 2 till 4, 50 pence. It was propped up outside the swimming baths. That's it, she thought. Tea dance. Tea dance. She saw herself gliding across a glassy ballroom floor, whizzing in a spin turn. She was 16 and dancing at the City Hall on a Saturday night and watching the rainbow bubbles spilling over people's faces as the big crystal ball in the ceiling caught the light. The women's scent and the smell of brill-creamed hair had made her heart patter. Everything had been shining, and the singer up at the microphone had oozed and crooned Destiny Waltz. And during Destiny Waltz, she had met Les. Her destiny. In a dream, Annie dismounted and wheeled her bike up to the doors of the swimming bath. "Can you tell us about the tea dance today?" she asked the receptionist.
"Oh, yeah, love, same as usual. Afterwards, a lot of them have a go in the pool. You could bring your cozy."
"Thank you." Annie beamed, and then she soared off on her bike to spend the token in town. She bought a big black sports bag and a white toweling leisure suit and a slippery blouse that looked like leopard skin. It felt a bit peculiar going off to a dance at 2 in an afternoon, but she stood in front of her wardrobe mirror, fluffing out her scrambled egg hair and fixing in her gold hoop gypsy earrings and studied herself. It was as bad as being 16 and getting ready for the City Hall. As she cycled to the baths, she floated to and fro over stretches of gleaming parquet. The band was brassing up. The vocalist was caressing the microphone and her heart was skipping. She was going to meet her destiny again. In a drab, moderately sized room, groups of grey-haired, bulgy ladies were gossiping at tables. At the far end, a young chap was messing about with a hi-fi system, which kept letting out hiccups and gurgles and sudden wails. One or two men were engaged in conversation in another corner of the room. It had been just like that at school. Girls at one side, boys at another. Even in the playground. The ladies were giving her the once-over, she noticed. They all seemed to be gossiping about the grandbairns, her bingo, or some private scandal. "I wonder if he'll come, then," one woman was saying. She had very pink cheeks and a sprinkling of warts near her chin. "You bet your life that Eunice will be straight after him if he does. Bold as brass she is, that one. She's got such a neck on her." Annie bought a cup of tea and inspected the rim of the cup to see if it had been washed properly. She felt her mood going splat, and she had a sudden memory of the Yorkshire puddings. "Ladies and gentlemen, here we are for another swinging tea dance. Take your partners for the first waltz." A booming and crackling followed, and then the music began to warble, though always with muzzy undertones of distortion. This wasn't exactly the band brassing up at the City Hall and the vocalist's voice swooning in the flood of sound. A couple were taking to the floor. Their sloping bellies nudged each other as they moved. Annie thought of wide skirts flaring about glossy thighs and long black sideburns like pieces of felt and shiny black wavy hair. Just then a man came over. "Care to dance?"
"Oh, yes," Annie beamed. She was up in a trice.
"Haven't seen you at these before."
"No," Annie murmured. "No, I've been at work."
"I see. I come regular. Since the wife was two. When she went, I didn't know what to do with myself."
"No."
He was just leading her back to her table when through the door strode this electrifying figure in a sharp navy blue blazer and grey flannels and wearing a blue and white spotted tie and with a matching hanky lolling in his top pocket. His grey hair was slicked back and he had big bold brown eyes and a Roman nose. Everything about him proclaimed his dangerousness. A wave ran through the tables of grey-permed ladies. Annie saw how they were peeking up.
"Hello, Jeff,"
one of the men called. He nodded in the man's direction but kept on towards Annie's table. Annie knew he was making for her. A tango was just starting.
"Oh," she thought, "it was just like being 16 all over again. Only a hell of a lot had happened in between. Steak kidney pies, shepherd's pies, jam sponges, treacle sponges, wedding cakes, jam tarts and Leslie and now Jason the waiter.
Now then, perhaps you'd like to tango with me." He had rather a nasal voice, much softer than she'd expected. Oh, he was a very smooth dancer. In no time she was swaying back and letting her head tilt at an angle, whilst he fixed her with those bold brown eyes. But then, just when they were tangoing like mad, Annie saw the apparition dizzying through the swing doors. This mauve-haired piece teetered into the room. Her cheeks glowed with tropical tan, and she had a scarlet Cupid's bow mouth. She wiggled in her black ski pants and a big purple mohair sweater covered in little pearls and shiny bits. The dance finished. Annie watched how no sooner had Jeff led her back to her table than he was making a beeline for the brazen piece who'd just come in. Annie's neighbour said, "Hey up. Just look at that Eunice. See her? I said as she would, didn't I? Just look. Ooh, she's a man-eater, is that one." Her husband died of an heart attack. They say she's been married quite a few times. Any man, you're not safe with such as her. Oh. Annie concentrated on her empty teacup. She would have liked another dance. Her eyes followed the mauve-haired Eunice and Casanova Jeff. Everybody was staring at them.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this week, I'm afraid. So here's your DJ signing off.
There was a gulp and a click, and the cups and saucers rattled, and everybody began to get up and leave. Annie followed the group down the stairs and turned left into the women's changing rooms. By the time she was sliding into the pool, the others were already standing in groups in the water, their bathing hats pulled well down, their heads nodding, still gossiping. Then she saw Jeff pour poising up the bath. He reached the deep end, flipped underwater, and was soon heading back. When he came up beside her, she gave him a big beamer. "That's clever," she said, admiring his seal's head. "Oh, is it?" His soft, weak voice amazed her again. "Are you swimming up, then?" "I might as well." In one movement, he'd passed her. She continued with her laborious breaststroke. When she reached the deep end, he was waiting for her. "I can't do the crawl," she said as she hung on to the side. "Nothing fancy. I never could." "Oh, I'll show you. Come down to the shallow part."
"Don't let him start teaching you," a harsh woman's voice said.
It was the mauve man-eater, Eunice, and she was grinning. Her mauve hair had disappeared under an elaborate cone of rubber flowers. Annie resented this intrusion. She felt Jeff could have gone on demonstrating until she drowned. She didn't care. She just wanted him to continue.
"He always has to show the new ones," Mauve Eunice went on. "Men always like showing you things, don't they?"
And she actually winked. Annie was taken aback. "Well," Jeff's head came up and he gazed at the clock.
4:45. It's my tea time. I must get off home."
Annie was bitterly disappointed. She was about to say she'd better be off as well, but Eunice was addressing her, and so she turned away and half watched Jeff executing his butterfly, which almost displaced half the water in the bath.
"Oh, he always does that," Eunice said. "Like showing off. I don't expect he gets much chance to, anyway."
"Why, is he married then?" Annie asked.
"Oh, no, not him. He lives with his mam. There's nothing like that there. He's nice enough, though. Soft as a brush. You just have to let him play games. He's harmless, all right."
They swam side by side up to the deep end, chatting as they went.
"I get a lot of swimming in, you know," Eunice remarked as they set off on the return swim. "I've got this apartment at Tenerife. I used to go there with my husband, like, before he passed on. As a matter of fact, I'm off in a fortnight."
"Oh, you lucky thing," Annie said.
"Well, you can come as well if you want."
"You don't mean it."
"I do."
Annie listened to the harsh voice and seemed to hear the surging of the destiny waltz. This was it, then. This was the start. After the Black Forest gatto and burgers and chips and Les, there was going to be more of Eunice and foreign travel.
"I can't get over it," Annie spluttered as she missed a stroke and went under, gurgling.
"Steady up," she heard Eunice saying.
"I'm that flustered."
"That's all right, love. You're on."
Destiny Waltz by Daphne Glaser was read by Judith Barker, and the producer was Gillian Hush.